Órale pues, Razo, welcome to Chicano Highlights. I am your host, Beto, Beto Man, and we have a very special guest here with us, Mr. Ray Carrion. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Beto. Thank you for having me here.
All right. We're going to start off with your parents. Where are they from?
Wow. My parents are both from Puerto Rico. My dad is from a town called San Lorenzo, and my mom's from a town called Caguas.
All right. And what are their names?
My mom's name is Marta, and her original was Marta Garcia Pinheiro, and my dad is Domingo Carrion Torres.
All right. Brothers and sisters, ¿cuántos tienes?
I have 5 sisters, and I have 4 brothers. We're a family of 10. I'm number 9.
Órale. So you're kind of the jokester, maybe?
No, nah, I was kind of really mama's boy. So I was, I think, at a good part because I just sucked up all that knowledge that that my brothers and sisters already made their path. And I made sure I sucked it up and try to pass it on to my younger brother.
All right. Now, of course, I know that they're United States citizens, pero ¿por qué se vinieron para acá? Where did they come first to the United States?
Well, my dad, obviously, he was a military veteran. He was in World War II in the Army. After he got out of the Army and he was with my mom, and they did get married. Their first place after they'd left Puerto Rico, they went to New York City.
All right. And then from there?
From there, New York City, my mom stayed in New York City, and my dad heard that in a town in Ohio, Lorain, the city of Lorain, Ohio, right off the Great Lakes, there was a place called the U.S. Steel that was the second largest to the steel company in Pittsburgh, was hiring and stuff. And so he made his way down to Lorain, Ohio.
All right. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Lorain, Ohio.
All right. All right. And where did you go to elementary school, middle school, and high school?
I started off, since I'm a Catholic, obviously going to church every day. My parents' first school was a kindergarten, and it was an elementary school. It was called Lincoln Elementary School. And then from there, I went to Catholic school, St. Joseph's school, and then I went to St. Lad's and St. Anthony's, and then from fifth grade, I started back into public school system, which was Meister Road School, and then also then to Masson Junior High School, which is 6th, 7th, and 8th, and then from Emerald King High School, which is still in Lorain.
All right. Now, did you face any discrimination since you are Puerto Riqueño, verdad? And the color is a little off from all the little güeritos out there in, where is it? Idaho?
No, Ohio.
Ohio.
Ohio. It was the Midwest. Definitely not in the beginning of my school years because of where we first grew up, we lived in South Lorain. South Lorain, which was close to the area where the U.S. Steel mill was prominently a Hispanic area, black area, very minority of whites in that area. Once in the fifth grade, that time, then my dad eventually moved, and we moved to a more prominent neighborhood, and that was going to the west side, and that was over there where obviously all my neighbors were whites and stuff like that, very not very minimal Hispanics and very minimal black. So a little bit, when I was going in some of the school, but, you know, I grew up in the streets back in that area, and then my little toughness would come out from dealing with, four brothers and 5 sisters that, you know, nobody messed with me. I had a little bit of discrimination of things that would say, and that is a reason why the way, like, the name Ray came out from my full name, which is Rafael, because when I told my guys, people, my name was Rafael, they would say Ralph, and I already heard too many Cheech and Chong albums, and I didn't like Ralph, so that's how Ray came. So, yeah, a little bit of discrimination when it came later, but not that much that I would say that it really affected my childhood.
All right. And so what year, más o menos, did you graduate high school?
I graduated in 1980.
All right. And so after high school, then what?
After high school, obviously in my earlier years in elementary and in junior high, you know, I was definitely a sports fanatic. Music didn't come into when I was like 13, but earlier. So I was really into sports a lot, basketball, football. So, you know, I was always thinking, you know, quarterback, because in junior high school, there was, I think I was only the second Puerto Rican ever to be a quarterback in that situation. And then going into my freshman year, going into Emerald King High School, it wasn't, that was another position. I think there was only one or two ever that Latino guys that were quarterbacks and stuff. So I was really thinking sports until my freshman year, going into high school, where I started. And it was kind of like funny because, you know, I grew up, you know, with my family, my uncles into trio music and family into music. And it was one day that I went to my next door neighbor and said, "Hey, man, let's go out. Let's go play." And stuff. He goes, "Oh, I got to practice guitar." I said, "What?" And then I went across the street to my other friend, you know, there, Gabacho and stuff, and said, "Hey, man, we're going to go play." "Go, oh, no, I got to practice guitar." And I go, "Wait, these guys must have been talking. What's up with this guitar stuff?" And then you know, it just, that's how it led to, you know, I said, "Well, I got to get a guitar." And then but it was already in the blood because of my brother played guitar in the family, coming up into trio music and a lot of salsa music. So it came out naturally for me than it did for them.
All right. And so you started playing at what age?
I started playing in the summer of right before I was going to be a freshman. So that would be 13.
All right. And how many instruments do you play?
I play the guitar, and obviously from guitar you can play the bass. I do play a little bit of piano, accordion and stuff, and then a variety of percussion instruments from conga, bongo to timbale, just to get the rhythms that I use. And really just to help my guitar playing, just to know more of the rhythms than to really become professionally into the percussion thing because of saving my hands and stuff. But just to feel the rhythms and the other things of piano. I wish I could have more time. I try to get my kids into playing the piano because I think that would be the more benefit, but it's just time. But a little bit of everything just to broaden my range of playing guitar, but it's mainly guitar.
Do you write music?
Oh, yes.
What does it take to write a song?
For me, it just takes to being alone. And just thinking, there's so much we can go from. We can go from thinking just of a childhood to just thinking about my culture, to thinking about everyday stuff that happens, relationships. There's so much to write about. For me, it's just having the place to be where I have nobody bothering me, no phones, no stuff, and I can just focus on what I'm doing. And then when I need to take a little break, because then, you know, you just don't get to that certain word or something like that, get away from it, take a drive, and then when I'm driving, the word comes. And that's why every time when I'm in a writing, what I call like a fighter's in his fighting mode where he's training and getting ready, when I'm in that mode where I'm in a writing, it's like a training type thing, that I would always have a pad or a recorder with me in the car, because it's amazing how stuff comes with you in the car or when you're sleeping. All of a sudden you're sleeping and you dream it and you got to wake up, and what you're waking up and you're going to, just to get a little certain melody line, something like a little hurdle or a little stumble that you're having when you're writing. It comes at you at a certain time when you're away from sitting there trying to think about it.
And the thing is that, you know, you think you're going to remember later and you don't.
You don't. And maybe that's now cool, the benefit of cell phones, because obviously before you would be old school and have a little tape recorder, little cassette players that they would use like for meetings and stuff. If you're, or you just have the traditional, just a little piece of paper, a little notepad and a pencil. There's many ways that you can do it. But now with the cell phone or something like that, you can record it real quickly. And I have so much stuff on my old cell phones of, I never thought, you know, melodies that would come up. And I just wish that, you know, I could have really, just sit down and been, you know, making a complete living off of writing and ideas. But, you know, in true reality, I have to work and to pay for my kids and to put tables. So a day job takes a lot of time away from really creativity.
That's right. And is this so to write a song, do you need to come up with the melody first, the song first, or do you need to do both, let's say, the tones and the song?
There's really no set pattern, Beto. I mean, it's some people come up with the lyrics first, and then they come up with the melody first. Some people come up with the melody, a music thing. Some people come up with the beat. There's no really set thing. There's no way that you can say this is the way to do it, because somebody else is going to show you why I did it this way, and they maybe sold millions and millions of records. It's whatever works to get there. you know, there's many paths, like they said, to get to where I got to today, you know, and long as I got here and long as you got there and you've been on time, I was on time, and that's what it works. So everybody can do it their way. There's no really right way to say to do it, especially when you're in creativity.
That's right. I believe it was Bill Withers in an interview said that he would get all these lines down and just write them down. And then, you know, other people ended up putting the music to the lines.
Yeah, they piece them together. Yeah. They piece them together parts. Many times when I was doing a project that I was doing, I dipped into my first really, really heavy writing project. You know, hear me coming from youngster getting into rock and roll, you know, Kiss, you know, I got to play with Peter Criss from Kiss. I mean, I was rocker, young at heart and stuff, that the first chance where I really sat down and focused on writing that, you know, you would think it'd be blues or rock or stuff. But I thought at the time that I thought the market was that this was like, we're talking about 90s and stuff, yeah, early 90s, that the Spanish pop scene market was really hot, you know, with the stuff that Mark Anthony and the stuff that Ricky Martin was doing. So what I did is I did pop music, but I did it all writing in Spanish. And, you know, I my parents did speak Spanish, and they did speak Spanish to us while I was a child, but I didn't write and read fluently Spanish. I didn't, you know, I didn't need to take Spanish classes at school and learn hey, agua and little things like that. I was definitely, you know, developed in that way. But the literature, and I could only read so much, but to really get into where you're writing and stuff, oh, it opened a new a challenge for me to even learn more about language and to learn how, you know, the way the Puerto Ricans would use the slang, the way a Mexicans would use the slang, the way a Cuban would use the slang, Venezuelan, and certain things. So it was a learning experience at the same time where I was also writing. So I wrote pop songs that were all really written in Spanish lyrics, and some of them I translated into English.
Orale.
And it's incredible stuff because it was really great music, a lot of ballads. I like ballads and stuff.
All right. And so after high school, did you continue your education?
Yes, well, I knew once I got out of high school, and while I was in high school, obviously, you know, through my sophomore year, I knew I wasn't going to get no bigger than 5'8". And as much as I knew I had a good arm and I could, you know, do this and shoot thing, you know, hey, 5'8" ain't going to make it in no basketball and ain't going to make it in no football. So, you know, that went to the backtrack of the thing. But, you know, still staying physically and getting into it. But the music started taking over there. I started seeing the power of it. And I started using all the knowledge that I learned as a youngster of, you know, growing up in Ohio and listening to CKLW, which was an AM station out of the Windsor, Michigan, which is the Detroit sound from the Motown sound. And I grew up on the Motown sound that came from that era. And I had all that music, and from my brothers and sisters being older than me, listening to all those hits from everybody, from I could tell you from just so many stuff, from even Latin stuff. I used all that and just sponged that all up to eventually become of my stuff and put it into music and my guitar playing. And I shredded every day coming home from school, playing. And once that senior year came, I knew I had to make a decision on what I wanted to do after, because as much as I love being around the Ohio and Cleveland area, it was not big enough and not challenging enough for me to take it to another level. So there was two opportunities I was looking at. Obviously, when you're there, you look at New York City. And there was a school also in Boston that was well known. It's called Berklee School of Music that I was thinking of. But then there was that thought of that little Beverly Hillbillies of going all the way to the West Coast and going to California, where I had no family and very few friends, very, very few, very people that I just known, and to go to this great school that was known as the Musicians Institute of Technology, which at that time only had three departments: guitar, bass, and drums. And eventually that's the choice that I made, to go to California.
And how did that go?
Well, I took a whole year off when I finally made that decision. I passed all the tests and all the paperwork that I needed to do. I did get some grants to go in there, but I wanted to make some more money. I knew the price of cost of living out here was definitely extremely a lot different. And growing up, I didn't want to. I knew once I come out here, even though we're from a big family and my parents have been very supportive, I didn't want to come out here and start, you know, asking, say, I need help for this and stuff like that. So I busted my butt for a whole year painting houses, doing anywhere, any kind of stuff, and saving and saving and saving. And saved, you know, I would save maybe about $10,000 and came out here, which wasn't enough, but used that to really try to set up a base to stay out here. And so I was out here, I came out here in September of 1983. I drove my Ford Torino Ford down here, and I took three ladies with me. And the reason why that was because a buddy of mine that came out here was already going to, George Lopez was already going to graduate from the Musicians Institute playing bass. And I was supposed to come down here when he did. But I took that time to make some more money, and I needed to grow up a little bit too. So they offered to help pay gas and my expenses. My mom set that up. So I took it, you know, and it was an experience thing, but they helped me come down here, and I drove all the way down here in 3 days, and I started working. I came in September, and I wasn't going to start school. I came out here in September of 82. I wasn't going to start school till March of 83. So for 6 months, I ended up going to Orange County, staying with a buddy of mine, and I started working at ITT Cannon, loading up vending machines and making some extra money so I wouldn't spend the $10,000 that I brought, as I knew things. So I try to make sure that I could even, you know, get used to the area so that when I finally started school, I wasn't in a future shock of just being in California. I already knew how to get around. I knew Orange County. I've already been to San Diego. I drove. I knew the system so that when I started school, I could focus on that school. Because that school, you really need to mind my friends, you need to sleep, eat, you know, crap, think everything of just about music. And the more that you can concentrate on all the stuff that they're going to throw at you in 1 year, it's like 4 years, because usually more schools, you will go like, you know, a through 3 year program. This is 1 year of throwing so much at you that you just got to be able to sponge it up. And that's what I did.
All right. And how did you like California?
Oh, I love it. I was there already, like I said, I came down in September, and already October coming, it ain't getting cold, and all of a sudden November's coming, it ain't getting cold, and December, I don't see no snow, I see it in the mountains, wow, and you know, it was a trip, because that winter thing of that time when I came down in 82, it ended up being, I think, the third record now, because it's been over cliffs, but I think at that time it was the second rainiest part. It was like 52 inches or 53 inches. So, you know, to me, the rain was, everybody's like, man, it's raining a lot. I was used to rain and snow. So the rain, it was cool. You know, later on, then it was more dry, but nah, once it was that winter time and I knew that, it wasn't snow, and also when it was hot, it wasn't muggy and, you know, and humid like the way Ohio see. When you grow up with that, you're used to that. So humidity, you know, hey, man, after being in snow and it gets hot, that's how you would just think it is. Because once my parents took us to Florida, it's hot and humid. And whenever we went to Puerto Rico, it's hot and humid. It wasn't finally till I finally came to the West Coast in California and the Arizona to know that it could be hot and not be humid.
we all experience different environments, ¿verdad?
Oh, yeah, because your hair can go from just natural to a natural fro over there with that humidity.
Arale, pues. Finishing up your escuelín, the school there, what did you do afterwards?
Well, afterwards, after that school and that school, let me tell you, and anybody, any students, anybody that's into music, what a great school. It's expanded now. It does everything. If you're into engineering, as we're sitting here in front of an engineering board, they got complete courses on running audio, engineering system, broadcasting, learning all that. It's also now a vocal for vocals. It's now also for keyboards besides percussion, drums. It's just a learning business, the business, because many musicians and many people got to understand that you know, this is a business, and as much as it is fun and it's art, as there is many artists that have grown up before us that didn't know the business, and to this day they got ripped off or don't even own rights to their songs or even names, or they were ripped off by managers or people just because they threw either drugs or something in front of them to detour them away from knowing the business. And you need to know the business. So the school is still great. So I highly recommend anybody hearing this to look into the Musicians Institute now in Hollywood. So the second I got done with the school, I knew that, man, there's teachers that are teaching me. The competition is just fierce. I mean, all these students that I went to school with there, some of them are staying, some are going back to their countries. I'm going learning with people from France, Spain, the best. I mean, I learned just as much from my fellow students as I learned from also these great teachers that are there locally and these masters. But there you are, man. You're thrown out just like a, you know, just like a bird or a bald eagle has been taking care of its young. And then all of a sudden you're tossed out and you got to go get your food. You got to do it. So, you know, that's why other people, either they're trying to be an actor, they're starting to work at a restaurant or something. I was lucky that this real good buddy of mine real quickly came up to me and says, "Hey, Ray, man, you want to go work at the studio? They're paying like $18 an hour." I'm going, "What?" And this is like, remember, 1984, $18. I go, "Doing what?" He goes, "Whatever they tell you, man. It's a set. They do TV shows. They do movies and stuff." And so that where I got to the studio that was owned by Francis Coppola, who obviously produced The Godfather and many movies and stuff. And I worked there as a maintenance crew at a TV and motion pictures where they've done so many stuff there. I mean, that's the original studio that they did I Love Lucy from 51, 52, 53. So I was in entertainment at the same time learning another field of something to fall back on, because as an entertainer and as an artist, you definitely want to become the multimillionaire and obviously be a star. But what about if that doesn't happen? What else are you going to do? What else are you going to do? You need a fallback plan, anything you do. And so, wow, this turned out to be great. It wasn't really physical. So I started learning stuff about the shows. And that's where I started working until I started getting gigs and started, you know, meeting people that would get me into the music scene. So I had a steady job at that time. And I'm still doing it to this day.
All right. So who, tell me some of the people that you met to get you into the business.
Well, obviously, the path there starts from the person that I told you that I came all the way out here to see, and I brought in the car, which was his mom and his dad, mom and his sister, and that's George Lopez. George Lopez, we went to school together back in Ohio. He graduated a year before me, and he was the one that also was the one that kept me really thinking about the Musicians Institute, because he already made up his mind, and he was going to come out of here and go to the bass thing. Georgie's a salsero. He's obviously Puerto Rican too, but he was more into the Latin music scene, Latin jazz, salsa and stuff. So Georgie really came out here and started meeting people and started knowing people. So when I was done with school, I remember George took me and he took me a rehearsal, and we went to a rehearsal, and there was, he was rehearsing with the salsa band. Some of those guys there, the Blas brothers. It was the Blas brothers, Johnny Blas. There was also Salcedos. There were three of them. And there I just started seeing that he started building in with the salsa scene with the local people. There, a little later, he started playing with a guy named Jose Papo Rodriguez and Victor Patoa. Well, little old to know that Jose Papo Rodriguez played just about with everybody from, you know, Tito Puente to the Eddie Palmieri's. And Victor Patoa was even larger. Victor Patoa was a conga player that you guys heard with on Malo, on Suavecito, and Nena. He is the original conga player of those parts. Also, he is the one that played with Santana, with Coco Escovedo, and back in those days, even before Pete Escovedo. He's on the album that, if you see the Santana album that was recorded live, I think in Hawaii, and Santana looks like it's in a burning type of mountain. And if you open it up, that's Victor Patoa on congas. Him and Coco Escovedo eventually broke out of that, and they started the band Azteca. From meeting Victor Patoa opened many doors for me.
All right. So what bands were you involved with?
Starting there from eventually from the school and stuff like that, you know, I was, like I said, working and just trying to doing little stuff there, one little stuff here, a little jingle, helping little guys here and stuff. But it was eventually Victor Patoa who put his own little version of an Azteca thing. So he had called it Azteca 2. He didn't want to try to make it like the way the original Azteca version. It was a little bit more Latin jazz thing. We didn't really feature. In the beginning of it, he did reach out to the original singer from Azteca. The name just went blank on my head.
That's okay.
But he did start it there, but then he wasn't really into the project and stuff. So then Victor would just pretty much took it more into where it was instrumental type thing. But at that point, playing with him there, that's where Coco Escovedo came down, saw me play, and then obviously Bobby Espinoza, original keyboard player for El Chicano.
All right. And any other bands?
Well, from playing there with Victor, that's what I said, that opened the door, because Jose Papo Rodriguez, about a year later, was playing and doing a tour with El Chicano, and I met another percussion player through that whole little family of percussion guys named Tony Rosa. And Tony Rosa was also currently playing with El Chicano, and they had just got them finishing a Korean tour. And after that Korean and tour and Jakarta tour that El Chicano went, Bobby Espinoza was considering a couple of band changes and stuff. And Tony Rosa and Victor Pato and Jose Pablo Rodriguez recommended me to Bobby Espinoza. He came and checked me out at, obviously, at that place at that time. It was called One for L.A. Victor Patoja called it One for No Pay, because you would obviously play there, great things, and it never would pay that much. The place later on in many years turned to Mama Juana's. People know that recently, and now it's a different restaurant. But that's where we played, and like I said, Tony Rosa and Papo made a recommendation to Bobby Espinoza, and with no audition, he told me, hey, man, I got a gig coming up in 4 weeks. You want to do it? I said, let's do it. And that opened the doors to get into El Chicano, and once I got into El Chicano, it opened the doors to many other things.
What year was this?
This is 1986 that I started doing the first rehearsals with El Chicano, and then started performing with them in 87.
All right. And meanwhile, verdad, because again, people think that it's just glamorous to be a rock star, verdad, is that you have to hold down a lot of different jobs, because a lot of times, as a musician, you don't get paid a lot. People think that you do, verdad, but that's not until you make it big, verdad?
Oh, yeah. In a situation like that, it's obviously, even when I first started, came out, it's the record deal. There was still at that time that opportunity where if you had put some good original material out, that the record industry still had what they call A&R people that were out scouting, going to the old clubs at that time, the rock clubs like the Rainbow and the Roxy and the Gazaris, the clubs on the strips on the Sunset Strip over there in Hollywood. And that's how these those places over there was known as the pay for play, or you come and play here. The club owners had all these original bands down there. Hey, you got to come and play here, man. These were all the executives and A&R guys coming. Yeah, they're coming hanging. They hear like your music. Then, you might get that opportunity to get a record deal. Obviously, starting with those things with El Chicano, they already had their record deal that had came and went. That was like nothing in the picture at that time there. So there was no way of thinking that even if I got a gig with El Chicano, then I'm going to become, have a house. I'm seeing the guys in the band. They don't even have that. So, and these are the guys that have been in the thing. So that was just only a step. I tell everybody, life's a ladder. And that was just one of the steps that I needed eventually to let me meet a lot of other people and move on to other people and move on to other paths. And that's eventually what it is, when I met Peter Criss from Kiss, and that helped my career too.
All right. ¿Y te casaste?
No, I had never been married. I do have 4 kids.
All right. What are their names?
My oldest is my daughter, Amber. She's a military veteran from the Navy. And then after that, my son, Rafael. And then I have another boy. Well, let me see. My daughter, ages of, she's probably about 30. And then my son, Rafael, is about 22. And then Adrian, which is living with me now, is 14. And then my youngest is Lorenzo, which he's 10, which came from the name San Lorenzo from my dad, and place in Puerto Rico where that all started from.
All right. And is there anything else that you want to tell me, man? Where can they get a hold of you?
Well, people can get a hold of me very easy. Social media is a big thing of getting hold of me there. But, I do have an events page. It's called Carry On Events. My last name is spelled Carrion. And then the word events.com. I do, do put some shows on at the same time too, besides playing with a lot of different artists. So you can look me up there. And then if you want to just go on YouTube or Google my name completely, Ray, R-A-Y, Carry On, you'll see many videos are there with great artists, from Latin jazz artists to, Peter Criss from Kiss, who I toured with in the 90s, in between doing stuff with El Chicano. There's where I thought I would get my big chance to get that record deal and stuff, because we did do some original material submitted to record companies. But at that time, the industry was changing into alternative music. So that glamour rock and roll style of 80s, 90s music was starting to go away to alternative. And that's where that path eventually then kind of went down. So no major record deal there. It was just luckily that I kept working and staying busy playing with a variety of all kind of artists. Because I tell people, just don't do anything that's just narrow-minded. Reach out to all type of sources. I play rock. I play blues. I play salsa, old school. I say anything that brings the income in. As long as you're having a good time, it's all music and fun.
All right. Is there any last messages you want to give to the chavalitos out there, you know, boys and girls who are interested in getting into the business, being the rock star, you know, hindsight, with that 2020, what would you tell them?
Stay with your dreams. Every dream is possible. Don't let anybody ever take that away from you. Creativity is there as much as you want to put into it. If you're here locally in this area in California, you have so much opportunities of what you can do out here. Obviously, the entertainment industry is one besides of music. Look at what my fallback was on to work in television and work in that studio that my buddy told me to work at back in 1984. And I've worked in many studios throughout. I only worked 1 year there, and I went and worked in other studios. And I've worked on shows from Judge Judy to, I seen Miley Cyrus from a young kid from her little shows, you know, Hannah Montana to an adult. So I've worked in entertainment. I've worked on cameras. I've worked on television stuff at the same time, still keeping my music career going on. And that's what I tell you to do. So do as much as you can. Suck it up as much as you can. Learn knowledge, especially when you're young, because as the older you get, you get more responsibilities that are going to take you away from what you really need to do. So in these early years, take it, suck it up. Don't let people put you down. There's always going to be obstacles. As we were talking earlier about the track field that was around here in the corner, life is an infinity of hurdles. You're always going to get pushed down. You're not always going to always get the pat on the back. Just let that make you stronger. Maybe just build your willpower. And the one that you need to count on mostly, besides your faith, is that person you see every morning when you see in the mirror yourself. And that's the only one you need to blame if you're not making it there is yourself. So it's there, man. Just do it.
All right. Well, muchas gracias.
Yeah, I just want to thank you for having me here and to all your listeners and definitely all your support there. And hopefully we'll be back again to talk more.
Órale. That's going to do it for us, Raza. You've been listening to Chicano Highlights. I am your host, Beto. And remember to listen to Radio Aslan KUCR 88.3 FM. Broadcasting on Friday nights from 5:30 in the afternoon all the way through Saturday morning, ¿verdad, Simón? Que yes, that's at 7 a.m. in the morning. And then, of course, you can listen simulcast on KUCR.org. Remember to listen to Beto Man podcast on EastLAReview.com. That's REVUE.com. There's a page there, and there's about 19 different Chicano highlights that you can listen to, so you can binge all day long on the Beto Man. Ahí te guacho, raza. Hasta la próxima.